Hey guys, if you are a father who would like to have a deeper relationship with your son, if you have a son that you're trying to pour into and develop, if you want to help your son see the greatness that you know he has in his life, I've got a very special event coming up June 23rd through 27th. We are going to be in Cleveland National Forest. My father's coming with me, the man who you hear me talk about all the time, who helped me become who I've become in life. We're going to be doing a father-son rite of passage event, map and compass, land navigation. I'll be teaching you how to use map and compass in the exact same place that I learned in Navy SEAL training. This is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You'll have these memories for the rest of your life. If you want to find out more, you can click the link in the description below. We've only got 16 spots available, and we've already sold a few of those. You can find out more at theimpossible.life/legacynavigators. Having knowledge isn't what makes you useful. It's the things that you've trained in that make you useful. And one of the big differences between learning and training is the level of effort required to train. The level of effort required to learn is very small. You can sit there on YouTube and be entertained while you learn lots of stuff. But to be trained in it is painful.
That's impossible.
Let me tell you what I believe.
But your weakness is not your technique.
Yes! Yes!
Don't think you are. Know you are.
The Impossible Life Podcast.
I mean, you're sitting on a winning lottery ticket.
An idea that is fully formed, fully understood, that sticks.
This is the Impossible Life Podcast, because Nick and I are attempting to live impossible lives. What we know is that nothing is impossible. So instead of using impossible as an excuse to not try, we'll use the pursuit of impossible as an accelerant for greatness. If something's never been done before, that just means it's unexplored. If they tell you it's too hard, it's just waiting to be simplified. Impossible is a default label used by uncourageous people, unwilling to take a risk. The real truth is this. The solution to any impossible task starts with this question. If I had to, what would it take?
Welcome to another episode of the Impossible Life Podcast. I'm your co-host, Nick Surface, and I'm looking across at a man born so well-balanced, he never even had training wheels on his bike. That's right, friends. The former Navy SEAL. Garrett Unkelbach, a man who knows that pain is the best trainer of all, and class is always in session. Now, I don't know if you actually did have training wheels on your bike. I had a lot of things going through my head on that one, about perhaps talking about how you live on the edge so much that your favorite band even has a guitarist named The Edge and all these different things, but I felt like that was the best option. Why did I feel like that was the best option? Because today is about training. This podcast is how to train men. And this could be how to train anyone. We said training men because we are men, and that's what we have experience in, especially Garrett. And that's what we're going to go into. Following last week's Discipline and Comfort, which, by the way, we had a large amount of positive feedback, which we appreciate, and it was kind of refreshing because, as we said on that podcast, we talked a lot about discipline when we first started this podcast, but it's been a few years, and so we've changed. Discipline has not changed, but we have, and so it was fun to kind of revisit that. And what led us into this one? Was not just off the back of last week, but I do think it's irrelevant. Garrett and I just spent the last, 4 days in the woods out in Livingston, Texas, which is, for those of you that don't know Texas geography, is down near Houston. So it was about a 4-hour drive for us. I got a flat tire on the way down there, so it ended up being almost a 6-hour drive for me.
Which made you late as a leader.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah, and your dad was sure to let me know, as he always does. I'll never forget when I stabbed myself, and your dad came up and made sure that I had a solid takeaway about never forgetting how stupid I was in that moment. Thank you, Pops.
You'll remember that story forever.
I really will, because it stood out to me. He took a picture of it, and then he was like, "What are you doing?" Anyways, so the reason I say all this, so Garrett and I, as you guys know, we're both involved in leading our men's group at church. Garrett's our leader, and then the way we have it separated out is because we have so many guys, we have over 300 guys every Saturday, we're divided up into 4 tribes. And so, like, in my tribe, we have 70-plus men, and so all the tribes are around that size. And so just for a stake of order and wanting to be connected. So every once a year, we take a camping trip out into the wilderness. And previously it was up into Oklahoma, pretty crazy time. And we're going to get into that a little bit, but how would you describe our camping trips to somebody that's out there? That's a listener. It's like, oh, great. You guys have a men's group going camping. Like, that sounds really exciting.
You know, you'll appreciate this. because you've experienced it and watched me do it, and I think that's probably taught you a lot. But people ask all the time, like, you know, what do I need to expect for the camping trip?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't need to expect anything. I just hope I just show up, right? It's a part of the path. Like, you signed up for the path, so you're coming on the trip. Bring what's on the gear list, and, you know, that's all you need to know, which is essentially the same thing I did to you guys at Mount Massive.
Yes, that was exactly where my head went. And I've talked, you know, it's funny, we're going on a little bit of a detour here, but I've talked to so many guys, and I was like, I know Garrett jacked us up on the altitude sickness on purpose. Because I know how much you enjoy watching us all suffer, and you purposely left that out.
Well,
you say there's nothing you could do.
It's not like I did it to you. It was just like, well, I mean, if it's going to be cold, what do you want me to tell you? Like, it's going to be cold. You're going to be cold. There's not, you know.
No, there's these things called jackets. Just like there's these things called altitude pills, which I did take recently. They actually do work.
They do not work.
Well, anyways, this is
altitude pills and a jacket are not the same thing.
Okay. All right. Well, anyways, the point was, is I feel like you enjoyed watching us not necessarily be prepared for that. But yeah, so this camp, back to the camping trip. So what the camping trip is, man, it's so we, Garrett talked about the path in our group. The Mighty Men, that's what we're called. We have what's called the path. And so what this is an agreement that you make at the beginning of the year that there's certain things that you're going to do as far as serving in the church, your attendance, being accountable, being tied in. You know, it's really a path to help disciple men. And we put some very clear standards in place. You think that's an accurate assessment?
Yeah. For me, you know, when we first, like when Mighty Men was first growing and first establishing itself, I did initially get some criticism from people of them saying, hey, like, you know, that's not how churches do things.
Right.
And my response was really what I would say to people that were critical maybe of the process was just, hey, look, I have experience in training men.
Yes.
Right. I don't have necessarily experience as a church leader. I am very clear on what the word says about how to teach, who should be a teacher. And what I'm going to add to that is some of the principles of leadership,
yeah.
Right? That I learned. There's things that the military did that were really good. They're very effective. They work in the military and outside of the military. They're principle-based. And I kind of blended that with areas, honestly, where I saw the church breaking principles of leadership.
Very good.
A lot of men's groups, I would say, can be soft. Yeah. Like, hey, let's just be overly inviting.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, attendance is important. We do want people to show up. We want people to actually be there. But the goal is not attendance. The goal is that people would be changed, that people would be transformed. It's certainly no process of trying to earn your salvation. But on the flip side, it's saying, hey, look, God has paid the ultimate price for us. Or Christ has paid the price for us. And now, and this is, you know, how James spoke about it. Because I'm saved, now I will work.
Right.
Right. And that's really what we're called to do, is that we should change because of what Christ has done for us. And so all we did in Mighty Men is just kind of put some standards with that, is, hey, this is a part of the program, right? If you don't want to be a part of this program, that's fine. Doesn't mean you're not saved or doesn't mean you don't have salvation, but we're going to put a process in place whereby on the other side of this, we know we will have grown.
Yeah.
Right? We're all going to ascribe to the same things, which is unity, by the way. Hey, we're all going to do the same things. We're all going to go through the same process. As a leader, I don't ask guys to do anything that I'm not already doing.
Correct. And to that point, I got to experience a little bit of that. So this is my fifth camping trip. I've been around for 3 years and I think 8 months at the time of this recording. And so during that time, I remember my first camping trip was Garrett's first time being the leader of Mighty Men at the camping trip. And I will just say that the experience has gotten very different, because that first camping trip, you were like hard. I mean, it was like basic training in some respects.
I had less guys.
We only had 67 guys, which, by the way, just my tribe alone, we had 250 out in the woods this past week. Mm-hmm. So it's not that far removed from me in my mind. And the reason that this came up is because I had a great time this weekend with my men. So much of what we did, it was just such an impactful experience. And the reason I say this is because I was texting Garrett. I was like, bro, I so appreciate you and the fact that you have trained in the most elite military unit in the world, because the military is I don't know that you can say there's anybody out there that's better at training than the military. As you've said, they can teach.
No, they can. Not only can they, the level that they train from, a very low level that they train from, to a very high level.
Right.
They also have consistent fruit. It's not like, oh, we trained great men one time.
Right.
Right. Yeah. They have a repeated process.
Seriously.
Of this type of man comes in and this type of man comes out.
Right. And there's no luck involved anymore. It's like, yeah, they have it down to a science.
Decades of experience of, we put in this type of man and this type of man comes out.
Yeah. And so we get to benefit from that. And the reason this stuck out to me so much is because I basically on this weekend, I was responsible for the same number of men that were on the first trip that I ever went on. And it stuck out to me so much how much I remembered everything that you did when I was there. Because when I came in, man, I was like 2 months from California. And as your dad likes to remind me, man, you were soft.
I still remember you wearing those Puma track pants. Okay. I was like, who is this nerd?
Well, that nerd was your future business partner, one of your best friends. So, you know, I win. Anyways. But yeah, I was wearing Puma track pants in public, which is, I didn't realize was a violation of the leader's standards.
Well, not just, you know, if you want to wear that to the,
here we go.
If you want to wear that to the gym,
yeah.
You know, whatever, but
well, dude,
not to the woods.
Right. Well, yeah, I had nothing. Like I bought everything for that camping trip. So this is like, we used to camp in the middle of the woods.
I don't know, just some jeans.
Just, okay. You know, it's my story, bro. Let me finish. That like I had nothing though, man. Like I, you know, camping. The only time I'd camped before this was literally in San Alejo, which was on the beach, and I'd wake up and go surfing every day. So what do you think I needed? Board shorts and flip flops and like a sleeping bag. So now we're going out to like the middle of Brocobo, Oklahoma. We're sleeping underneath these trees. We had crazy rain. Sleeping on rocks, which I remember I slept like 2.5 hours a night because I was so uncomfortable and the dudes next to me were snoring. I was so unprepared. Like that trip was brutal. We had Captain Awesome over here taking us on like our fun excursion for the trip was a 14-mile canoe trip that took 7 hours. And our reward when we were done was you going, guys, that took way longer than planned. You guys were going slow. Run up and get your stuff and run back down here. And I remember I was so dead tired. I was running up the hill to my campsite to grab my chair and come back down for our next activity, which I don't even remember what it was. It was like takeaways and Bible study and all this stuff. You pushed us hard. And we were very tired on that first trip. But the thing is like, so when I was in there, I just remember all the stuff we did. And like, he sat us down. He had guys standing up, share your expectations, share your takeaways, like share, like, and we were, yeah, you were put on the spot in front of a group of 67 men. And I remember I was like, okay, this is different. And it, you know, I remember what was going through my head of kind of trying to figure out what was happening. You know, I didn't want to stand out. I'll be honest. I was kind of like just feeling out the culture.
Trying to be the gray man.
Yeah, I was a little bit of a Polish turd, as you would say, or actually that's as I would say. But the point being, so this past week getting to lead men, and what do you think I did? I just took everything that I'd learned and experienced and just did the exact same thing. And it really stuck out to me, and I sent G a text. I was like, bro, I am so grateful to be able to learn from a guy like you that, and I understand why you did those things. Because at the time, all I was doing was like, why is this guy pushing us so hard? Like, who cares if we're 2 minutes late down to the campfire? Like, it doesn't really matter. This is what's going through my head. Like, this guy, this is just his preferences. This is just because he's a Navy SEAL. Bro, we're not in buds. Like, relax. This is the stuff that's going through my head. Now, fast forward a few years, and I'm the one leading the men, and I get it. Because every single one of those points is a training point. We're not training. You're right. If you're 2 minutes late.
The thing is not about the thing.
The thing is not about the thing, but everything is about everything. As Pastor Keith says, and that's exactly right. It was a matter of understanding. You being late is not, yeah, you're right. It's not going to kill you now, but if you can't even show up on time when you've got only got yourself to look out for, you don't have your kids, you don't have your wife and everything else, what are you going to be like in life? So I said all that, and I gave you sort of that longer intro because we're going to dive into training. We're going to talk about the process of training, the elements, the difference between learning and actually training. And we're going to really get into this because I think it's so important for all of us to understand not only how to train others, but also how to train ourselves and right. What we need to be trained in. So that would, my question would be for you, what do you think you're trained in? And we were joking around about this. Some people might be like Call of Duty, World Warcraft. Like, what do you think you're training? The only time I was thinking about this, and some people would be like, oh.
People would think about what they went to college for.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm trained in accounting. I'm trained in whatever. I'm trained in weapons. There might be a lot of people that think they're trained in weapons, and maybe they are. I don't know.
And think about the difference between, like, if you're saying I'm trained in this, what's the difference between being trained in something and just knowing something?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Garrett, and that's the perfect segue. Why don't you tell everybody, what is the difference?
Well, before I'll say that, we were talking about training, and I was kind of, as I was starting to explain this to Nick, really what the meaning of training is, you know, because there's a difference. If when you think about training, and then you compare it to knowing something or learning something, and you realize there's a difference. Mm-hmm. And learning is just knowledge, but training is preparation for testing.
Yeah.
Right. Just because you know something doesn't mean you're ready to be tested in it. And when I think of being tested, I think of the way that I was tested in the military. The way that I was tested in the military wasn't, hey, can you do this in a comfortable environment? Right. You've heard me tell the story of when they brought a bunch of professional CrossFit athletes out to SEAL training.
Yeah.
And these were people who are really good at performing in a very specific set of circumstances. but you get them outside of the circumstances that they're used to, essentially get them outside of the classroom, get them outside of the gym, get them cold, hungry, tired, chafed, all of the, you know, wet, covered in sand, and their performance cratered. Hmm. And to be trained for something means that you're tested in it, that you're ready to be tested in it under any circumstance, right? When you just know something, yeah, maybe I could, you know, if you give, that's like, I enjoy golf because of how challenging it is. And there's a lot of guys who are like, oh yeah, I'm a 15 handicap. They're a 15 handicap when they, you know, drop three balls from the fairway and they hit the shot that they know they're capable of, right? Golf is play the ball where it lies. Mm-hmm. And it's a very different game when you play it that way. A lot of people, oh, I'll just, let me re-putt that. Let me re-chip that. Let me re-hit that shot. Let me hit another one off the tee. You can't do that in life, right? You can do that when you're playing a game. But when you, I don't call it golf if you're doing that. But anyways, training is preparation for testing. And the difference between learning and training, learning is just what you know. Training, for me, the way that they did it to us, the way that they showed it to us in the military is, number one, learn how to do it right. Mm-hmm. Right? If you and I, you know, I could show you a quick YouTube video on how to reload a weapon. And I like to take people to the range just to spend time with them. And if all I have is an hour with someone on the range, really what I'm going to make sure of is just that they know how to reload a weapon. An hour is not enough time for me, because I have to bite my tongue and overlook things, because they'll put their thumb in the wrong place, grip their weapon the wrong way. And there's not enough time for me to show them how to do it right. Mm. Right. There's a difference between being able to reload the weapon and doing it in the most efficient and most effective way. Right. But training is the first step of training is, can you do it right?
Right.
Right. Where an instructor shows you, hey, this is what correct looks like, and do it exactly this way. They would in military training, the instructor would show us, and it's like, all right, get up here and do it, right? And you would mess up one little thing, and it's like, okay, you did this wrong, now go get wet. You did this wrong, run a tire up the hill. You did this wrong, do 100 push-ups. We'll come back again, and you can try a second time, right? There was consequences with your choices. There was consequences with your performance. This is preparing you for being tested.
Right.
Right. A lot of people want the zero consequence learning environment. Mm-hmm. And that's not a good learning environment. Right. The military drilled stuff into me to where I never forgot how to do it the wrong way.
Right.
But that's because it's putting pressure on. Right. Just like if you ever played competitive sports, right? Where you really go out and develop great skills is preparing for the game. Because you know in the game you can practice all day long. You can have batting practice all day long. You can kick goals all day long, but when you get in the game, you're going to get, you know, a few pitches to swing at. You get in the game, you're going to get maybe one or mm-hmm. two attempts at a goal. You don't get to kick the ball 100 times. You're going to get one kick. You're going to get two kicks. Yeah. You're going to get two or three swings, maybe just one good pitch, right? So you have to be prepared for when you get that one opportunity.
Let me just say real quick, G, because I think some people might be listening out there and go like, okay, you know, they did that to you in the military because you guys were going to be in extreme circumstances of war, and so there might be massive consequences of life or death. Like, what I do at work isn't so serious. And what I'll immediately say to people is, you have no idea what you're costing yourself.
That's why you'll lose.
That's exactly right. You're probably sitting there with things not working in your life, and you're like, ah, it's just bad luck, or oh, I don't know why this is going the way it is. It's this person. Or so, you have some reason, not realizing that you're the person that might be slapping yourself.
This is the talk I have with. This doesn't apply to most people listening to this podcast, but it'll at least make sense. This is the conversation I have with special operators when they're leaving the military.
Right.
I'm like, look, let me tell you how set up you are to win at life because of the way that you've learned how to train at anything. All right. I'll say you do the same way you learned this in sniper school, the same way you learned this at breacher school. Go into your next place, whether you're going to be a business owner or you're going to work for somebody, and learn there the way that we learned in the military. Train yourself in that way, and you'll dominate your competitors mm-hmm. because people don't actually prepare to be tested. So in the military, it was step one is do it right. And there was pain just to get to doing it right. Not do it quickly, not beat anybody at it. Just step one is do it right. And we would spend so much time on the little details, right? I would run laps or get wet over like my thumb being an inch one place or the other, right? Do it exactly this way. Then once you can do it right, which takes a lot of time, not like I can get ammo, you know, an empty magazine out of the gun and a full magazine back in the gun, I can teach somebody to do that in a couple minutes.
Right.
But to teach someone to do it right takes hours and hours. Then once you can do it right, it's do it right thousands of times. Repetition after repetition after repetition. After you do it right 10 times, that's proven that you know how to do it right. But you do it right thousands of times to where it goes from being a conscious effort to an unconscious effort.
Right.
I don't even have to think about doing it the right way. Then the final test, the way that they would train us in the military, is to do it under stress, do it in an extreme environment, mm-hmm. right? And you think like, oh, you know, I work in an office. Have you ever been stressed before?
Right.
Have you ever had anxiety? Have you ever been tired? Have you ever been emotional?
Right.
That's what an extreme environment in your workplace looks like.
Right.
In the same way that they'd be like, okay, now that you know how to do it right, we're going to make you do a 2-mile swim into the ocean, carrying, you know, into the beach from the ocean, carrying all of your gear. Then you're going to sprint to the range and we're going to be, you know, blowing off Arty Sims and there's going to be smoke everywhere. And you need to do the same thing that we were practicing last week.
What's an Arty Sim for those of us?
An artillery sim.
Oh, right. Okay. Thanks.
Right. So,
yeah,
you know, those things. Right. And so it looks like a smoke grenade, but they pull the pin and throw it and it simulates that sound.
Right.
It's just pressure.
Right.
Rather just add pressure to a situation. I'm just saying that's training. Right? You could do it right. You did it right over and over and over again. Now let's practice doing it under extreme duress.
Right.
And again, we don't, you know, I'm not saying you need to bring Arty Sims into your office as you train your employees.
Yeah, don't do that.
But I'm saying the way that you train is you train it to a level where it's like, now I can do this at any time. Because if you can't do it any time, then it is luck if you'll do it right.
For sure. Yeah.
Right.
I don't want to be lucky. I don't have to rely on luck.
It's like, oh, well, you know, I did practice this, but I didn't practice it for this environment. I didn't practice it for this environment. When you're so good at something and you've done it thousands and thousands of times, doesn't matter what circumstance you're in, doesn't matter how you feel, doesn't matter if you're, you know, having a good day or not, you will perform.
I could just see you like starting a YouTube series called Extreme Office Training.
Yeah.
It's like spreadsheets and stuff and you're throwing these rounds. Could be a hit. Just think about it. Anyways, now one more thing, because I want to go in. You talked about level of effort, and I do want to go into that. But I want to highlight for people something that you said, because I feel like a lot of my growth and the benefit I get of being your friend is little conversations we'll have, because you'll say things that in my learner mind will kind of go away and unpack them. And you said to me one time we were talking that the guys, and you said it again today, but you said the guys that spend 20-plus years in the SEAL teams and they come out of DevGru, which is a development group, that's the most elite for the SEALs, correct? Mm-hmm. They like most of us think, I'm going to train and then I'm going to get to perform. Like, okay, I'm going to train and it's game day. Great. Whereas you guys are just like, we train, we go to game day, we just train. We just keep training. And you talked about when those guys get out after 20 years, they're capable in so many things, because what would seem miraculous and supernatural to the common person, it's just a matter of what you just described. It's just training in lots of different areas. So you learn to do it right. You do it thousands of times and you do it under stress. And you just keep doing that with different skill sets in different areas to the point that you become so capable and proficient at so many things. And you highlighted like a level, I think what you were talking about with CIA Black Ops people that are just, when we were having the conversation originally, you talked about how capable they were and just the possibility.
When you've just spent, you know, 20 years of your life or 25 years of your life, where every year you grow and all the things you're already good at and you learn one or two new skills. You know, after a couple decades of that much time in the military and you're learning new skills all the time, you come out extremely capable. And I just want to use that as an example. For whatever your age you are, maybe you're, you know, 17 listening to this podcast, you're 35 or you're 60 years old. What have you been learning the last couple of years? Mm. How many new skills have you picked up in the last couple of years? Is there something that you've at least been learning? Is there something that you've been training in? Yeah. You're saying, I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to learn how to do this. And I'm going to add it to, like, it's the silly, silly saying, but the way that they would talk about in the military is tool on your tool belt, right?
Right.
Like now you've added another tool, right? And when you first get into the military, you got a screwdriver and a hammer.
Right.
But over time, these guys become experts and you have so many different tools for so many different applications.
Yeah.
And when you've learned how to, like, essentially, after you learn 5, 6, 7 different skills in the military, it's the same way that physical discipline works for discipline in the other areas of your life. If you can be physically disciplined, now you know how to be disciplined in other areas of your life. After you add so many tools, you look at anything. And again, this is the conversation I have with a lot of special operators leaving the military. I'm like, dude, just look at this next thing you're doing is another school, right?
Right.
Like, we go to schools every year, After deployment, you come home, you've got 6 to 9 months of a time before you go back and train with your platoon, and you just go to schools. You fix yourself, right? You requal in the skills that you already have, and then whatever time you have left, you go to new schools. Mm-hmm. And I said, just look at it as going to a new school. You're going to go to school for 4 weeks or 6 weeks. You're going to be there, and you're going to spend 10 hours a day learning this new skill, and you get very good at it in a short amount of time. You can, once you learn how to do that, it's like, man, I know how to just pick up new skills because I understand what training looks like.
Yeah. And I think the example I'm remembering you used was Jason Bourne. And you said, you're like, that's you. That's based on real life people. There are people out there.
It's a fictional exaggeration of real people.
Yeah.
That they've just spent years and years and years, and all they're doing is training new skills all the time.
Right. And for me, I watch that. I'm like, dude, there's no one out there like that. Because, you know, he'll just look and like see a camera and immediately know what's happening, where it's going, and you're like, okay, this is Hollywood.
Plenty of that is Hollywood, but I've met plenty of guys in my career that are insanely capable.
Right.
Right. It's like, man, this guy knows how to lockpick. This guy knows four languages. This guy knows, you know, not just military explosive, knows improvised explosives, knows all foreign weapons, right? Like just skill base after skill base after skill base. It's like, yeah, this guy's, you know, knows engineering, knows automotive. Yeah.
That's just crazy, man. Because even one of those would be like, "Hey, great! You're really a professional careers person."
Even when you start putting all those things in one person, you become a very valuable asset.
Yes, I can see that. You're starting to get this crazy look in your eyes. So let's move on to level of effort. You talked about like that. There's a level of effort to be trained.
Well, one of the things that you need to understand with training, right? And the whole, just to zoom out really quick, what we're trying to accomplish with this podcast is like Nick. I love that about Nick. Nick is a learner. Right. But we want you to be. And that's why Nick and I are such great partners, because I'll just say something and Nick's like, well, let's talk about that. Like,
yeah,
you know, let's expand what you're saying there. But you need to be more than just a learner.
Yeah.
Don't just like have knowledge. Having knowledge isn't what makes you useful. It's the things that you've trained in that make you useful. And so one of the differences, and that's really what we're exploring in this episode today, is the differences between learning and training. And one of the big differences between learning and training is the level of effort required to train. The level of effort required to learn is very small. You can sit there on YouTube and be entertained while you learn lots of stuff. But to be trained in it is painful. And that's why you've heard me joke like the military is good at making things that are really fun painful.
Yeah.
Why? Because they made them training.
Yeah.
Scuba diving can be fun. Military makes it very painful. Skydiving can be fun. Military makes it very painful. Shooting and explosives should be really fun. Military makes it painful. Why? Because it was always about training.
Right.
We didn't do stuff like even like driving trucks in the desert. Like we would do things till you were exhausted, and that was on purpose, right? Like who wouldn't love as a man, and probably plenty of ladies too, who wouldn't love as a man to like be driving vehicles that you're not responsible for in the desert, just like ripping around. It's like, we're just going to go do jumps and stuff. We would do that until we were tired of it.
Right.
Right. Because it wasn't, we're not here for fun. We're here to train. We're here to become great at these things. And so one of the big differences between learning and training is the level of effort required, right? Like when we did dive training in the military, like I really enjoy scuba diving. I have all kinds of certifications. Scuba diving's fun when you can actually see underwater, you know, it's daytime and the water's warm. But we never did that. All we did was dark and cold training. But we would spend a lot of time in the pool doing really basic things. Take your gear off, put it back on underwater. Now, I've been through civilian scuba diving, and it's called ditch and don.
Mm-hmm.
You do that like a couple times in the military. And really, a pass is like you didn't drown and you got your gear back on.
for scuba training?
Yeah. Oh, right. That's really all it is. That
right.
If your gear comes off, that you can get it back on, right? That you don't lose your weight belt. Like there's a couple very simple wickets to pass a ditch and don for civilian scuba diving. In the military, it was the same as with the firearms, right? You miss one tiny little step, you're going to pay heavily for this.
Right.
Right. And that was so that we could perform when we were tested, right? Like you learn the same things in civilian training, but they're not preparing you for testing.
Right.
This is the same, like when we would go work with police forces in the military, I have so much respect, honor, and mercy for police officers. Because the military spent years and millions of dollars training me to do what often police officers are put in a position where they're required to do.
Right.
And that's when we would go train with police forces. Like the reason we were training with police forces is because all these cities all over the country, they own these great training grounds.
Right.
and we wanted to use them. And it's like, hey, let us use your training ground and we'll spend an afternoon with you and do some knowledge transfer. We'll train with you if you just let us use your space. And we would train with some of these guys. Like, man, it was heartbreaking to see the level that these guys are trained to, just because they don't have as much time. They don't right. get trained as hard. They don't have as much standard. They don't have as much. They don't have the leaders that are showing them this is what right looks like, and then doing thousands of reps. For example, I mean, police officers. I think that the average police officer shoots maybe 50 to 100 rounds a year of training.
Are you serious?
They don't get to shoot.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's budgets.
Yeah.
Right. I think a lot of police officers shoot on their own dime, and that absolutely varies. We'll have, you know, people that email the podcast and say, I wish I got 100 rounds. And then there's going to be other police officers that email us and be like, oh, we get 100 rounds a month, right? A lot of that has to do with budget. But the point is, even if you got 100 rounds a month, that's not enough.
No.
I shot over 100 rounds a day when we were at home.
Right.
Right. If I had time, I mean, I would take a whole ammo can, which is like 500 9mm rounds, and I'd go shoot for a few hours.
Right.
Right. Almost every day when we were at home. And so that's what it takes to become extremely proficient.
Yeah. It reminded me of a quote, and I looked it up because it's by Jose N. Harris, and this kind of highlights it. And he was talking about musicians, but he says, amateurs train until they get it right. Professionals train until they cannot get it wrong.
That's exactly what it is.
And that really is. It's like, you know, I just, that minimum standard, and I'm speaking to myself as much as anybody else out there listening. Ask yourself whenever you take something on, are you just trying to go like, hey, I got it right. Great. We can move on. I think about what you said about scuba diving. God forbid they actually have to don and ditch to save their life, because guess what? You're going to feel a lot different emotion when your life's on the line and you're not just in a pool where you can swim to the top.
That's right.
But you don't think that way. You're just like, oh, I got it right. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, let's hope we don't have to find out.
A little bit of a false sense of security there.
Yeah.
But that's also why most scuba diving for civilians is very limited environments, right? Like, you're not even allowed to dive inside of wreckage as a civilian scuba diver right. until you get to a much higher level of certification, because... If you're just a average level civilian scuba diver, you don't really have the capacity to do ditch and don. Where if you got stuck, you could take your gear off and then, you know, still live.
Right. Well, hey, you know, that's great. I like that.
Last little piece here. Yeah. Like one of the great example of training. I remember when we were new guys and you're doing machine gun training.
Right.
Oh man. Like any guy thinks like, oh, shooting machine guns, this would be so fun.
Awesome.
And they make you shoot machine guns until you hate that thing. like, I mean, you'd shoot out the barrel, you'd break the bolt on these guns. I mean, thousands and thousands of rounds. And what we're doing is you just have a box. Like a box is, you know, depending on which caliber, is going to be 100 or 50 or 100 rounds, depending on which caliber machine gun you're shooting. But you'd shoot at the kneeling, shoot at the prone, shoot standing up, go empty, and then like basically like a burpee, like you're wherever you're at, you just hit the deck and have to immediately, you know, empty it, take that box off, put a new box on, and do it very quickly and precisely. And changing out a machine gun is a few more steps than just taking a mag out and putting a new mag in. You have to pull the bolt back, open up the feed chamber, put the brass in, and you have to set it. It's an open bolt, so you have to put it in a very precise place in the machine gun before you close it. It's just easy to mess it up, and you can get dirt in there, especially when you're under pressure, you're tired. It's just hard to get right, but you got to be able to get this right under pressure, because if you're shooting a machine gun in combat, it's not a good situation.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding.
And I remember the new guy training when we were doing this. We did all this during the day, and then we went out there at night, and you're having to you can't see even under night vision. Your focus is far out. Your focus isn't near, so you can't really see. Like, you can see your gun is there, but you can't really see it good enough to do the objective with your eyes.
Oh, right. So your muscle memory.
You have to do it all by feel.
Huh.
And so we would do this again at night, shooting machine guns, and all you just got glowing barrels on your left and right. You know, like I have vivid memories of this, glowing barrels on my left and right, seeing, you know, just tracers fly, because we're all on a line doing this together. You know, a few dozen of us shooting machine guns just constantly. And you got a guy behind you with his night vision focused in, watching you, and he'll turn the red line on if he needs to, watching you to make sure that you do it correctly.
Huh.
And we would shoot until like late hours in the night, just practicing these box changes to make sure that you could do it under pressure. So it's very different than if I took you out there, I could show you how to change a box on a machine gun, but it's a whole nother thing to be able to do it under pressure at night when you're exhausted.
See, and that's where I think that we, you know, we're so fortunate. I was going to say me, but also the people just that, you know, if you're, whether you're listening to this podcast, you're in Mindset Mastery, you're in our Mighty Men group, whatever. Because think about somebody who's trained to that level. I honestly don't know that I can say I'm trained to that level in anything in my life.
Well,
and, that was just like everything for you guys.
If you're listening to this and you're in Mindset Mastery, my challenge to you would be not to learn what we're teaching in Mindset Mastery, but to train in what we're teaching in Mindset Mastery. And the way this course is designed, I'm not there with you. You have to take it and train yourself. You can't just take what you hear and be a learner with it. You have to go and train.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing about life is, like, you can choose to be trained, and you can also choose or be unwilling to be trained. The difference is you don't opt out. You don't suddenly go like, you know what, guys, I'm just going to stop training. What happens is you come up with some sort of reason. I was saying to Garrett beforehand, there's a great proverb we read recently, because we do the proverb of the day, and this is Proverbs 26:16. It says, lazy people consider themselves smarter than seven wise counselors. And to me, that's how you opt out of training. I already know that. Dude, what does this guy know?
Training hurts.
Yeah.
That's what I've been trying to explain for the last few minutes, is that training hurts. And people who don't want to be trained, that's what they say. They say, oh, I already know that.
Right.
That's not what I asked you.
Exactly. It's training. So what is unwilling to be trained look like?
It's, are you prepared to be tested?
Yeah.
Right? That's the question. I'm not saying, do you know how to do this? Because we would train all the time in the military and stuff I was already proficient in.
Yeah, because you were a hunter anyways when you went in there.
Well, I'm not even saying that. I'm saying, I'd already been through the training in the military, and I'm already passed the test.
Right, yes.
And we're going to keep training.
Right.
Because training is what we do.
Yeah.
Right? Training is the preparation for combat. Training is the preparation for the test. If you didn't prepare for the test, you're going to fail the test. And a lot of people think that they're going to pass the test just because they know.
Right.
And that's the scripture you're talking about in Proverbs. That's the fool's mindset. Like, oh, I already know that.
Yeah.
No, you need to be training for it. Whatever you think you know about being a father, are you continually training and being a father?
Very good.
Whatever you think you know about being a business owner, are you continually training and being a better business owner? Mm-hmm. Or are you just saying, oh, I know?
Yeah.
A lot of people fail in life who know.
That's so good, G. You actually said that people who are unwilling to be trained fall in every single hole, and they only learn from the pain of their own experience.
That's right. The people who don't want to train, the people who don't want to go through the pain, it's, you can be disciplined or you can get disciplined.
Yeah.
And the people who don't want to be disciplined and train, they're going to get disciplined. And getting disciplined is a different type of pain. And oftentimes it's shameful too. Getting disciplined looks like, oh yeah, I already know that. I don't need to do that. And then you fall in the hole that everyone else who got training avoided. Mm-hmm. It's you. Every lesson that you got to learn in your life is going to be, you have to learn by experience. And I pick this one up young, and I always try to apply it. It's one of my filters for life. And that's Benjamin Franklin, who said, a wise man learns from his mistakes. A wiser man learns from the mistakes of others. And training allows you to learn from other people's experience. So much of what I learned in the military, right? I feel super fortunate. And you get, you know, Nick, you're like, man, I'm getting the benefit of all the lessons that Garrett learned. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I'm getting the benefit of men a generation before me who learned lessons in blood, right? And they brought it into our training, right? And if you rebuke that, that's fine. You're just going to pay a hefty price for it.
For sure. And I mean, PK says that what you honor, you have access to, meaning like if you're willing to honor and put weight on the experience or on the lessons of other people, you can learn from them, like what you just said. You don't have to go through it yourself. And I mean, I'm never going to go through buds, but there's a lot of things that you've pointed out or called out or bared standards in our friendship or told me, hey, you need to do this because this is better. You're weak here. And it's been a huge benefit, man. I don't want to resist that because I think one of the things that's good is we both want to grow like forever.
What's one of the things, I'm putting you on the spot here, what's one of the things that you feel like you've learned from me for training wise that at first you were like, man, that's, why are we doing that? That's,
dude, I have a list at some point. No, I'm not even joking. I have a list at some point that I'm going to put out on my social media or for our YouTube, just called 5 things I've learned from a Navy SEAL. And so I have this list that I'm actively compiling. I have one for you. I have one for Pastor Keith. And I have a whole list of takeaways in my phone. The one that I'll say is, you really highlighted to me what ownership looks like. Mm. And that may sound like an obvious one, because it's like, okay, Jocko wrote a book on it. But I remember whenever you would say certain things to me, like, that's an awareness issue. And I was like, dude, that's not that. I can't control that. That's not my fault. And you would highlight to me. You're like, no, you were unaware. And so this, because you were unaware, you went into it, and this is how you thought about it. And then whenever it happened, you're completely missing where your responsibility is that in that. And so I went from like the simple way that I look at this, G, before, if I shook up a shaker and it would like, you know, spilled out all over the sides, I'm like, oh, stupid shaker. And I'd be mad. I'd be like, that's what I would say. Stupid shaker, man. This thing leaks everywhere. It made a crappy product, blah, blah, blah. Instead, now, you know what my thought process is? Why didn't I check to see that that was secured before I shook it up? And that may seem like nothing, but how much better of a thought process is when something goes wrong in your life, rather than seeing who you can blame or why it happened, you look at yourself in the mirror and go, what should I have been doing that I wasn't doing? What should I be better in that I'm not in currently? That was a game changer for me.
Yeah, it's the filter that the SEAL teams live through is they're getting asked to do things that there is no cavalry. There is no support. And so the filter that they look at situations through is, what would I do? How would I prepare for this situation if everyone was counting on me?
Right.
And if you want to be that type of person, live that way.
Yeah.
Not say like, man, you know, I'll prepare enough. You know, I'll try.
Right.
Right. I'll try. And I could quote a vulgar quote from The Rock, which I won't quote. Not The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, the movie with Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage.
Welcome to The Rock.
Yeah. But it's being prepared for anything that could happen.
Right.
Not saying, well, I'll try and do my best in this situation. It's saying I'll be ready for whatever comes.
Yeah. I mean, we could quote something that's not vulgar. Our man Yoda, who said, do or do not. There is no try.
That's right.
We say that all the time. All right. Well, I want to give you the practical elements and the hands-on benefits of having a guy like Garrett here. So we're going to talk about the process of training and then the elements of training. Because I talked about how I had that campfire takeaway of really understanding why you did what you did. So we're going to break down these elements, because then you can start to see how these apply literally to anything in life that you want to be trained in. So, G, this is your genius. So what's the process?
Three-step process here. This isn't – the military is really good at doing this. They didn't like teach this format, but this is so principled that it's also in the Bible.
Okay.
It's three steps, right? And this is you can relate this to discipleship. This is what discipleship is supposed to be. And there's a scripture. It's John. I want to say it's chapter 6, but I may be wrong in that. But Jesus says the student is not greater than the master, but the student can do everything that the master does. Right? The student's not greater than the master, but the student can do everything the master can do.
It's Luke 6. So you were close.
Yeah. Luke 6. It's in John as well.
It's John 13.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I got those mixed up. But anyways, Jesus says the student is not greater than the master, but the student can do everything that the master can do. And a lot of people think that like, well, what would be the flip side of that? Well, there's a teacher, or there's a master, and there's a student, and he's helped the students learn,
right,
but not to his level.
Right.
Right. And so the way that they do it in the military, this is very similar, and this is really what I've tried to apply to discipleship. And your whole takeaway from the camping trip is fruit of that process.
Yeah, 100%.
Right. Number one is see it. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I'm going to show it to you. I'm going to show you, like, before you ever do it, I'll show you what right looks like, because we talked about earlier, do it right. And when I was learning how to do it right, I had someone who could do it right, and they would demonstrate it to me. It's see it first, then it's do it, right? And we'll step into all these. I'm just giving you the three step right now. It's see it first, then do it, right? After you've watched me do it, and I'm going to hand you the weapon, you do what I just did, and I'll correct you until you do what I did, right? And we may be in a loop there of see it, do it, right? Mm. You'll watch me do it. I'll hand you the gun. Nope, that's not right. Give it back. Let me show you again. And we'll be in a loop of see it and do it for a while. And this is where Jesus was with the disciples for a long time, right? He was demonstrating most of the time. He said, a time is coming when I won't be with you, right? He says that about the poor. He says, I'm taking care of the poor now, but a time is coming when I won't be with you. You're going to have to take care of them. Mm-hmm. He says, a time is coming when I won't be with you, but I'll leave with you the Holy Spirit, who will remind you of what I said.
Yeah, he was the helper.
And teach you and guide you. And so it's two things there. But anyways, Jesus was showing for a long time, demonstrating, also giving the disciples an opportunity to do. Then the third step is teach it. Mm-hmm. And this is really where you cement the discipleship part. The way the military would teach us is, well, as step one is, you shoot the rocket launcher. Step one is you watch the instructor shoot the rocket launcher, and he'll teach you all the little points of performance. Then step two is you shoot the rocket launcher. Then step three is you teach someone else how to shoot the rocket launcher. Mm-hmm. And the military, in teaching it, this is like part four, but it's really like step 3B is after I teach someone to shoot the rocket launcher, I'm going to watch them teach another person to shoot the rocket launcher. And when the student that I've trained can correctly train another student, then my training is complete.
Yeah, that's so good.
Once I've trained a student and watched him train a third generation of student, then my training is complete, right? And that proves the multiplication. Because if you stop there of just Garrett taught another person, but you didn't test if they could multiply, right? If they could produce fruit, then it's not a full cycle, right? It could potentially stop with the people that I trained. And that's what the military is making sure, hey, look, we're not going to lose this essential knowledge that we have. The masters at the top will pass it down to the people below them and make sure they can pass it down so this doesn't die generationally.
Yeah,
right? So good. And that's the same thing that this discipleship is supposed to be in the church, right? That you can, just like Jesus was saying, your student's not greater than the master. You're going to have a Paul in your life, right? But eventually the student has to get to the same level that Paul was at, because Paul will die and go away and you'll become the Paul.
Yeah.
And you have to lead other people in that, right? And you got to make sure that you're raising up people behind you that can take your place when you're gone. And so much of, and I'm not criticizing any church in particular, I'm criticizing the church as a whole. And this is where we've all got to grow. I'm not even being antagonistic. I'm just saying this is where we got to be better. It's for all of us. This is where we got to be better, is in discipleship, is raising people up to the level that you're at. And it's see it, do it, and teach it, and make sure that they can teach it to other people. Right. If I just discipled someone and said like, oh, great, I did my part, that's not enough.
Yeah.
I've got to disciple people to the point that they're discipling other people and I'm overseeing the discipling that those people are doing and it's working. And that's when I know I've done my part.
Yeah. And we see that so much with the Apostle Paul, right? When he's talking about Timothy, but he also has, I think it's Onesimus is the other one's name. There's multiple people.
And Apollos.
And Apollos. Yeah, exactly. And that he's constantly teaching. I mean, even Jesus in the Great Commission, what did he say? Baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. And teach them to obey everything I have commanded you to. I mean, that was the whole thing. And you see the disciple or the apostles grow. Obviously, they were baptized in the Holy Spirit and, you know, came on them in power at the day of Pentecost. But you see them grow as they're going out, and now they're the ones that are teaching others. You watch them have to figure things out. Like, hang on, we got a bunch of stuff going on here. We need to have people that are taking care of the food. We shouldn't be, you know, spending our time there. We need to devote ourselves to teaching. And you watch them grow as they teach others.
And that's why, you know, the primary examples or analogies throughout Scripture are running, fighting, and combat.
Right.
Right. Because that Scripture in Matthew 28, where Jesus says, this is the last thing he says, you know, teach them, baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and Holy Spirit. Teach them to obey my every command. When I would read a scripture like that after my time in the military, it meant something very different to me.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Right? People say like, oh yeah, Jesus is saying like, you know, learn all the stuff. He's saying, no, teach them to obey my every command, not most. And that's, I would get destroyed in the military for getting it 99% right.
Right.
Right. You get it 100% right or you don't even do it. Right. Teach them to obey my every command, which I'm glad you brought that scripture up because it's a great segue into the last part of this episode, which, right, we talked about the process, see it, do it, teach it. The elements of training, the first element is standards, right? And that's what Jesus was saying. Teach them to obey my every command,
right?
Not some of them,
yeah.
Not the ones that you like, not the ones that are easy for you, not the ones that come natural to you. Teach them to obey my every command. And any person who throws themselves against the anvil of Scripture is going to find things that do not come easy to them.
Yep.
There's a part of following God that's going to be natural to you based upon your temperament, based upon your preferences, and there's going to be a part of following God that is very, very painful and very difficult to you, and you have to obey every command.
Yeah, and there's so many, like, that. I think that's where a lot of people struggle, is that they'll see, like, well, God loves me, and so their definition of love means that God just... however you are, you just stay that way, and I'm just going to love you right where you're at. And it's like, yes, God does love you, but what you fail to understand is that God is also a God that has very clear standards. I mean, when he was exhorting, if you look at Malachi, and people like to look at the Malachi scripture a lot with regards to tithes and offerings, he says, bring the whole tithe in, right? And there's so many times in Deuteronomy when he's like, obey the whole command. And because what was happening, if you read that whole book, was that they were still tithing, but they weren't bringing the firstborn of their flock or the spotless one. They were like, well, this one's a little flawed, but
they were
trying
to check the box with what was easy to them.
Yeah, but in their minds, well, we're being obedient. Yeah, we did it. We're being obedient, and God's like, no, I told you very specifically, if you look at the level of detail and everything, sometimes I think that can go past and we don't realize it wasn't just like, hey, go make me a tabernacle, go make an altar. Everything was so detailed. And I mean, look at our world. Imagine if we, like we've said this before, 1% closer to the 1% less gravity and we all float away. 1% more gravity and we're all crushed by it. It is an exact world that we live in, which speaks of an exact God that we serve.
God didn't spend the time ordering the world that he did, making the world as particular as he did for us to just look past it.
Yeah.
And when he speaks, he wants you to hear all of it, not just part of it.
So good. All right, so the first element was standards, G.
Right, and we've talked deeply about standards.
Recently.
Yes, and so you can go back and visit some of those recent episodes on standards, but it's one of the elements of training that there are clear standards.
Yeah.
Right, and again, go listen to the previous episodes on standards where we break down what a standard really is. But having standards in training was saying, this is just like I explained, that I could teach it to someone else and they had taught it to the next person. That was that's an example of a standard for training.
Right.
If you can do this, you have been trained. We had shooting standards. If you can do this, you have been trained. You have to jump this many times every 6 months, then you've been trained. There were clear standards. The next element is consistency, right? And training, consistent training will create consistent results. Hmm. It's not like, well, sometimes we train this way, sometimes we train that way. It's a built off upon standards, but the point is, consistency comes from standards over time.
Yeah,
very right. Good. If you keep those standards and you repeat it over and over and over again, that's when you'll get consistent results. And you consistently train. You didn't train one time; you train all the time, right? Those of you who are in great shape, we're going to have one of our friends on who's in great shape here soon, and you guys can hear about what that looks like from a physical standpoint. The body's great at adapting; it just adapts slowly, but it will respond to what you tell it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And you will get trained when you train correctly over and over and over again. You don't get good from training one time, right? You could go to the range with the greatest marksman in the world and do an all-day session with him, and you would not be better than someone who'd had a great teacher that they had trained with for years.
Right.
And that's the power of consistency, right? You don't have, and so that's why I kind of frown on, this is just a quick aside, I kind of frown on a lot of people's obsession with like optimization or like what's the best process, and they spend all their time just looking for the best thing when they would have gotten a lot farther with just like, what's a great place to start and that I can be consistent with it.
Yeah, minimum effective dosing is like, people are, the hackers are like obsessed with that. Like, what's the minimum thing I can do and still get the result? It's like, well, you're not really training, are you? You're finding that
you spent all your effort researching and never actually trained.
Yeah.
You're just trying to, people don't want to actually get off the couch and do the work. So that's consistency. The value of training comes from consistent training. And then the last thing is discipline, right? These things all work together. These are the elements of training.
Yeah.
Right? That there is a standard, that you do it consistently. And discipline, we just talked about discipline. And discipline is avoiding comfort for the sake of maturity.
Yes.
Right? When we've been trained, eventually, when we've been training in the same standard over and over and over again, and we're so good at it, and everyone's got it, right? Because we would train sometimes, and it's like, man, 8 out of 10 of us are good at this, but 2 of us don't get it. We're going to keep doing it until everyone's getting it. And then once everyone gets it, we can elevate to the next level.
Right.
But that only comes from having discipline. And aim towards maturity, avoiding comfort, right? Only at that place can we grow in our training. Training doesn't work if it's like, well, we'll only train when we're comfortable.
Yeah.
Right. You've heard me say, or we're only trained when we feel like it. You've heard me say this. I remember every time that we trained in the rain, because we would do it a lot. We would train when it was cold. We would train when it was rain. It's like, you know what? Range is scheduled. We've got the gear. We've got the equipment. It's a horrible environment for training, which is going to mean it's going to be a great day for training.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't go to the gym when you feel like it. You don't go to the gym when it's convenient. You do it consistently or you're not going to get results.
Now, let me tell you, like, that, and that's great. Actually, real quick before I say what I was going to say, G, can you explain, because some people out there might not be as clear, what do you see the difference between consistency and discipline?
Consistency is what you do over and over and over again. And what's great, too, if you really want to learn about discipline, this week we're going into discipline and mindset mastery, and we're going to dive really deep on what it means to be disciplined. We just talked about self-leadership last month. Just go to our website. You can see mindset mastery, or you've probably heard some other ways to get involved. But if you're interested in growing your discipline, you absolutely want to get involved in mindset mastery because of what we're about to do this next month. But discipline is your ability to train yourself. Discipline is your ability to avoid comfort. And it's a muscle that you grow over time, right? Just like I've talked about, where when I was young, I got disciplined in working out. I got tired of being called skinny and I wanted to be in shape. I saw myself differently and I started training. And I didn't realize what I was doing was learning how to be disciplined, right? Because I wanted so badly to be in shape, I learned discipline in an easy way. But then because I wanted to be in shape so bad, there were plenty of times I was like, man, I don't feel like it. I'm sick. I'm on vacation. Yep. I got to go to the gym anyways.
Yeah.
And I remember I had, you know, Pastor Keith, who, like, we would go on vacation with him when we were kids. And I remember going to the gym, me and him, right? My dad didn't go. Sometimes Josh didn't want to go, but I wanted to go and he wanted to go. And we would go train, right? Because you do it all the time. And once I learned how to be disciplined in one area, I realized that I could be disciplined in all these other areas of my life, right? So discipline is your ability to shape yourself. What discipline is honestly, it's a form of punishment, right? But it's you being able to punish yourself with a purpose.
Right. That's very good. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up there, Gene, unless there's anything else you have to add. So just to review, guys, the process of training, and think about where you can apply this in so many different ways, is see it, do it, and teach it. Garrett gave you a few examples there. And, of course, the elements. You got to have standards. You got to have consistency. You got to have discipline. I hope that helps you not only with training yourself, but training those that you're entrusted with, whether that's your kids, that's people that you lead at work, at business, at church, whatever it may be. Like, take this out there, because really we need well-trained people in this world.
Thank you very much for listening, guys. Remember to share, like, subscribe. If you think that this would be something that someone would enjoy, please send it to them. We appreciate it all. If you want to get in touch, you can follow us on Instagram at The Impossible Life. You'll find us on there. You can also email at impossiblelifepodcast@gmail.com. If you have any questions, if you want to get in touch and find out about Garrett's personal or business coaching, that's the way to do it. Thank you again for listening. Go out there, think better, and live the impossible. See you again soon.
Long before ice baths were a thing, Garrett was doing them in the SEAL teams. Now we do them as part of our daily morning routine to make us better. We are very pleased to have partnered with Freedom Plunge. Freedom Plunge is on a mission to bring cold exposure to everyone. They believe that cold plungers should be affordable, easy to use, and represent the customer themselves. Cold plunges shouldn't cost a fortune, and these ones don't. Garrett and I both use our Freedom Cold Plunge every single day. It's customized. You can put whatever you want on them. For us, we have our Impossible Life logos. And here's the best part. Just for listening to this podcast, you can go to freedomplunge.com, use the discount code IMPOSSIBLE, and save $500 off any Freedom Plunge. These things are half the price of the ones that you see on the internet, plus you're going to save an additional $500 with code IMPOSSIBLE. Go to freedomplunge.com and get yourself one now. You will not regret it.